It is Locked On Jazz for the 10th of January. The Utah Jazz, a brutally bad loss in Indiana. We'll talk about it, and some of the defensive numbers are disturbing. A fun night in Toronto. What from that is sustainable and can be used moving forward? Plus, new names floating around the Jazz. Daniel House and Denzel Valentine. How can they help? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Thank you very much for making Locked On Jazz your first listen of the day. We are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where we are right now. You can hit that subscribe button. We've had big increase in subscribes, hit the bell as well, and be notified. And good morning to the early morning chat crew that's with us. Bryce, Jay, Jorgis from Greece, Jared, Riker, Jeremy, Ashton, Paul, Taylor, and all the rest. Thanks so much for tuning in. Well, I might as well quote Donovan Mitchell and Bojan Bogdanovic on the Jazz performance in Indiana. It was bad. They were playing without Malcolm Brogdon, without Caris LeVert. We are playing without Rudy Gobert, and evidently being gone, Rudy Gobert was more important than being gone their two leading scorers. That was a disturbing performance. Health and safety protocols are coming, and they're going to rip through this franchise the same way they've ripped through everyone else. Though the Warriors, who are our chief competition, were without Draymond Green, were able to walk into our building and beat us, right? So you're going to have to find a way to win games, and that one was just poor. And really, it was poor defensively. The not having Rudy was obvious, but it can't be that much. I mean, first quarter of the game, our defensive rating is a 125. And yes, we're playing Norvell Pell, but Norvell Pell's defensive rating was a 116, while Jordan Clarkson's was a 134, and Hassan Whiteside's was a 126. So I'm not sure that we... You know, some of our regular guys weren't good. Second quarter, we got better. We were at a 112. Jordan Clarkson's defensive rating was still a 137.5 when he was on the floor. That was a bad stretch for Jordan. He had a bad game. He was minus 30. Third quarter, we're at a 111, so we're actually beginning to tighten it up. Hassan's actually good in 6 minutes and 31 seconds. He's a 92.9, and Norvell Pell for 2 minutes is an 80. He just isn't able to score. And we go to the small spread lineup, and Rudy Gay in 322 is a 150 defensive rating. League average is 110. If you don't know these numbers, you aren't familiar with them, welcome to the geeky Locked On Jazz, but I will walk you through them in a way that makes sense. League average is about 110. Anything over 120 is bad. And then in the fourth quarter, we were brutal. 134, 135 was our defensive rating. It was a 153 with Hassan Whiteside on the floor. It was a 150 with Donovan on the floor. It was a 142 with Bojan Bogdanovic on the floor. It was bad. And really, it stemmed largely from defense. Offense, there was definitely some selfishness that went on. The ball didn't move. They switched. We played one-on-one. I think we came out to go get our numbers that night a little bit. We were fresh. We hadn't played in Toronto. And we were looking for that. It was really a poor performance and disturbing, frankly. I mean, it was a performance that makes you legitimately ask yourself, there's one of three, you know, I said it in the postgame show that night, there's one of three aspects of this. You know, one is, and I don't even remember the third, one is that we just didn't play hard. We lacked effort. It's not great, particularly when everyone got the day off the day before. Two is that without Rudy Gobert, we're the Orlando Magic. And I guess tonight will tell us. We're playing Detroit. Detroit's bad. You know, Detroit's not trying to win. They got Cade Cunningham in the number one pick. They're looking to get one more and then amp it up. They're going through the process right now. And we shouldn't blow them out, but we shouldn't struggle tonight. They're 8-30. They're the 30th ranked offensive team in the league. They average 100.8 points per 100 possessions. The league average is 110. They're worse offensively than we are good. They might be the one of the worst offensive teams the league's ever seen. 10 points below the league average. Pretty unheard of. If we can't defend tonight, pull every fire alarm in existence. Truthfully. Because they're truly the worst off, maybe the worst offensive team the league's seen ever. So hopefully we can defend better. Some of our defense, you know, without Rudy, we were really poor defensively last year. We're getting worse as the year goes on right now. And that's not a great trend. I mentioned it earlier that, you know, you start to look at some of our guys. You know, the one that everyone's zeroing in on, we always do, is our backup center because they're not Rudy Gobert. And our defensive rating now with Hassan Whiteside on the floor has dropped to the 27th percentile. And I had mentioned that, you know, in our two primary lineups and plays, we were in the 13th percentile and the 15th percentile. What gets scarier is if you actually look at this game by game, the time has, it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Like if we start to look at, you know, the last 20 games or any of those kind of things with Hassan defensively, the numbers start to get ugly. His two primary lineups that he plays with, Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson, Royce O'Neal, Bojan Bogdanović, Hassan Whiteside lineup, which is kind of our first substitution. We're minus 2.2 now, and our second lineup is plus 0.6. Our third lineup with him, which is Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles, Rudy Gay, is minus 17.5. Not great. You know, someone on our postgame show said he's not a starter. Right, he's not. He's a minimum player who we got for free, basically. So I think it's actually, you know, this shouldn't be stunning, and I'm not sure it's fair to expect him to be a starting center in the league. And so everyone around him, you know, needs to step up a little bit in those circumstances. But some of them are, you know, some of our guys have really just learned how to rely on other stuff. And I think that's, you know, and we got to find guys who can play with us on and be successful with us on. That's, you know. When Jordan Clarkson and Hassan are on the floor together, our offensive numbers are so good we get away with it. Partially because we have a 33% offensive rebounding rate. Pretty great. And that's, you know, that's what Hassan does well. So we have to, you know, we've got to figure that one out a little bit. But that's back when Donovan and Hassan are on the floor together, our offense is at the 99th percentile. So we're plus 8. We can get away with it. The defense is terrible, but again, we get away with it. When we have Donovan on, when we have Hassan on, we get away with it. We didn't get away with it the other night. I have one minor request. This might be really minimal, but the next time we have a bad game, and maybe I'm wrong on this. This is just a thought. I could be really wrong on this. I would like our guys to go to the press conference table and talk about, I had a bad game, not we. I feel like if each person takes their own individual ownership rather than a collective ownership, then each individual has to own it and fix it. But when you go to the press conference and you say, we need to be better than this, it somewhat implies to me that you're not entirely sure it's you. Kind of we is where you deflect praise and I is where you take blame, is always how I've thought about it. And I wish there was a little more of that right now. Like when all of our guys go up and say, we have to be better. We have to do this better. We have to do that. Then my concern on that is I'd rather have them say, I need to be better. And then the next guy comes up and says, I have to be better. And then the next guy comes up and says, I have to be better. And some guys have to be better at a larger scale than other guys, certainly. Right. And I just think it'd be nice if they all owned it. So, you know, That's just a side note, probably nitpicking a little bit. But that was a bad loss. There's no question. And we're going to have to find a way to, one, get better in health and safety with health and safety kind of coming through our team. And two, we've got to figure out how to defend without Rudy if we want to go places. Like it's I understand what our front office did correctly, which is built an offensive juggernaut around the best defensive player in the league. It's the right thing to do. It's propelled us to great heights. We have the best record in the NBA since 16-17. But we have to find a way to get better defensively without being totally reliant on Rudy Gobert. And our guys have got to take a little pride in not just letting everyone turn the corner on the pick and roll or blowing by you or taking terrible angles on the wing in transition. Like, some of these things are just, they're better than that. Our guys are better than that. And that's the bummer to that. And the West is about to get brutally hard. We'll talk about that as time goes on. Clay's back. Friday was super fun in Toronto. And so we'll touch on that here in a second and kind of look into that and see what was sustainable. And then we have some new players on our roster and we'll touch on both. I haven't got a chance to talk about Daniel. I did a little bit, I think, on Friday. Daniel House Jr. and Denzel Valentine, who I don't think we've officially signed, but Woj tweeted it. But then Woj also tweeted James Ennis and was wrong. So I'm going to assume that Woj is right on the first one, on the second one. So we'll see. And I actually think Denzel Valentine's like in Detroit because he went to Michigan State. So we'll see. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends over at Murdoch Chevy. The Chevy truck lineup is incredible. It's the Colorado, the Silverado. I got to drive the Silverado for a while. It was sweet. That was like riding high up above the road, lazy boy chair, feeling strong, big, powerful truck. It was awesome. And the Colorado's the smaller, zippier truck that gets around. It kind of does all the family stuff for you. It's absolutely fabulous. Both of them are great. The SUV lineup at Murdoch Chevy is actually better than I think people realize. You know the Suburban and the Tahoe. Those are the legendary vehicles. And then I think the next step of it is the Equinox and the Trax and the new Blazer. It's pretty good. Solid lineup, top to bottom, over at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross, also located in Linden, in Layton. So if you want to stop by either of those two, please feel free to email me first at dlock09@gmail.com, and we'll get you set up at Murdoch Chevy and get you those that appointment. It's email me at dlock09@gmail.com. Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross and in Logan. Thanks so much for making Locked On Jazz your first listen of the day today. For your second listen, I strongly suggest Locked On Now, the run-through of the night's action. But if you're an NFL fan with the bloodbath of firings that's going on, any of our local experts would be amazing for you on all of that. All right, Friday was super fun. We let our young guys go play and do all their stuff as we got through Canada with no players or coaches testing positive and having to stay for 10 days. And so what was sustainable from that? I actually think there was one really big message to that game, which is how great NBA players are. All 450 of them are great. And I think that's the most telling thing to me. And we even saw that a little bit in the loss to Indiana, right? Like Kiefer Sykes is Dwayne Washington Jr. These guys are borderline NBA players. But you know what? Borderline NBA players can put it in the hole and score it and make plays. And if they bring the energy level at a higher level than you do, the margin between, hey, LeBron and Dwayne Washington Jr. is a big margin. But for most guys, that margin's not that big. And so if one guy's coming harder than the other guy, playing with a little more pizzazz, playing with more on the line than the other one, for a period of time of the game, you can really have like a pretty big impact on the game and change it. And that's what we saw. The Jazz came out a ball of fire. There was nobody in the arena. I saw it coming actually before. If you recall, I tweeted out a picture of the empty arena because there's nobody in Toronto going to games. And you could tell Toronto was just flat. Their first play of the game was a pass from Fred VanVleet right to OG Anunoby, just drops it out of bounds. And the Jazz took advantage. And they came out and they played really, really hard. And then as time went on, VanVleet took over because he's better than the guys on the floor because he now amped up his energy level. He tried to do it defensively in the second quarter. Then the third quarter, he did it offensively, just took over. Kind of the way Donovan just, you know, scored at will against Indiana. We just didn't get any stops. But because the best player eventually shows up and the game's beautiful in the sense that it has 100 possessions and somehow that's enough to always have the best team win. But there were some cool things to it. So what was sustainable and what is translatable from that game that we can take with us going forward? So the first one not surprisingly, that Eric Paschal was the best player on the floor. So he's the one guy who played in that game, who's had regular rotation minutes throughout the year and played really, really well. And Hassan was in that game, but he didn't have a great effort level that night. He didn't seem particularly engaged, almost as though the younger players willed him to getting engaged in that game. But so Paschal played, showed that he's been a regular rotation player in the NBA and was by far our best player in that game. He showed one-on-one skills that he had when he was at Fordham and that he kind of had to change when he went to Villanova. He showed some really strong plays inside the basket and a verticality and hops of power that translate to being elite NBA skills. He showed he's not a great shooter, which we actually knew beforehand, but his shot actually looked a little better. And he just showed a lot of different skills. Defensively, he played well against Jokic previously. Like, it's actually interesting, right? You put all these guys out there, you give them the opportunity to play, and who's the guy who looks the best? Oh, the guy who's actually been an NBA rotation player, who's borderline NBA rotation player, could probably play for us right now. The guy who looks second best, and we have to be a little careful here, it's just because he made shots, but he actually did look really good in this game, was Elijah Hughes. And again, like, oh, the Jazz just recently made a decision pretty much that Mia Oney was no longer part of the future. They made the tax cut on that, and Elijah Hughes made it. And that's actually been kind of obvious all year and through all of training camp. And that is certainly true. Elijah Hughes has just been a little bit better than Mia Oney the entire year. And, you know, when you look at Hughes, it's interesting to me a little bit from a fan base how much everyone's in love with Jared Butler. And like, Elijah Hughes doesn't get the same love. Elijah Hughes is the 39th pick of the draft. Jared Butler's the 40th pick of the draft. Now, our front office came out and basically said they thought Jared Butler was a lottery pick. Not quite, but pretty close. So I think that's part of the reason. But Elijah Hughes was the 39th pick of the draft in a year in which he got no draft workouts, no summer league, no training camp, no G League, really. He went to the bubble for a little bit and came out of Syracuse where they don't play defense regularly. They just play a zone. And he had to figure it out. This year, he got the offseason, he got the summer league, he got training camp, and he looks way better. Like, that's pretty encouraging to Elijah Hughes as a rotation player in the NBA. His shot has never been consistent. It was hot that night. I think he'd always be a streaky shooter. Could he be a 35 or 36% three-point shooter in the NBA? If he can, he's going to have a role. He's going to be able to play. You know, the more he can get down and get G League games, I think still would be super valuable to him. Just because that is actually what he does, is he's a scorer. And so I think that's important. I don't think he's played at all in the G League this year, if I'm correct. So you may see him start to head back there a little bit this year. But he's interesting. He's 6'5", 215. He's developing nicely. His legs, by the way, are like ski racer legs, not basketball legs. And I don't know the impact of that, but if you go up close to him, his thighs are mammoth, super strong lower. Can he be, you know, can that help him defensively, be really forceful? Does it hurt him defensively that he can't move side to side and he's not like an elite bouncy athlete? It could go either way on that. So, you know, keep an eye on that. I know people were really excited about Jared Butler. He did some things really, really well. He got into the paint a lot. He showed that first bounce dribble. He's able to always beat guys and get in the lane. He turned the ball over at 10. He's super sloppy with one. He threw a one-handed backhand looping pass that in the speed of the NBA is going to get taken away. He's done that throughout the year. He's really gonna have to tighten that pass. Has got to be a pow. And he's gonna learn. So, you know, I don't actually mind rookies who commit turnovers, like 8 turnovers for him. I think it was okay. Great. You know, you'll learn. You'll. I'd rather have you trying to make a play than not making a play. His shot's interesting. It comes from down low and he's short. And when it's pure, it's really, really pure. But boy, when it's off by a lot. And so I would have to watch him more to understand whether he's getting rushed in some unique way. I mean, he hit the side of the glass once. He airballed. He's airballed in just about every game he's played. And so my one concern is that because that shot takes a while, he's smaller. His shot spot is lower. He's really got to get – it's rushing, and now all of a sudden it's all over the place. When he's really got his feet set, it's deadly. You know it's going down. but he's going to have to learn how to get that shot off faster. He's got great touch. So again, he'll probably learn those things. So I thought those were the three guys that, you know, Pascal was the best. And it's interesting to me, that's, you know, it's boring, but I think it's really, really interesting. Like, that's what it should have been. Like, he's the best. And then Elijah Hughes, that was great to see. And I do think some of that's sustainable. Like, I think we're going to have, if we stop this health and safety protocols at two players, I think we'd be the first one to do that. So I'm expecting some more people to get hit by this over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And then, you know, some of these other guys are going to have to play. I did think the Trent Forrest turnovers was a little of a bummer, because kind of his signature is that he doesn't turn it over. And so that the minute you asked him to do more, he started turning it over. That was a little bit of a bummer, because he's been so good for us on so many other things that night. But the biggest takeaway to me was, like, NBA players are great. Even 10 through 15, 15 through 18, they're great. And so they can go out there and make plays and stay in games at a really – really high level. All right, who is Daniel House and who is Denzel Valentine? Plus your questions and your comments as we continue. Today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Built Bar. Coconut brownie. I just love it. I just love it. The grasshopper is really good. The cookie dough crunch is good. Right now, Built Bites are going away. They tried this product that was Built Bites, which are smaller little bites, and they're going away. So they're all 50% off. Right now, 100% real chocolate, 100% delicious. The Built Bites are all available and at 50% off. Plus, coconut brownies is like where it should be. It's the headliner right now. It's so good. Coconut brownie chunk. Caramel Almond Delight is my partner's favorite. He loves them. We just sit in meetings and on Zoom and we just sit around and eat our Built Bars. It's true. Ruby Chocolate was super fun and a surprise on that one. Go check it out, plus all the standard traditional flavors as well. You can build your own. You can mix your taste. You can take one like I do and just get coconut brownie chunk and nothing else. 130 calories, 2.5 fat grams, 4 grams of sugar is all, and only plus you're getting 17 grams of protein. It's absolutely fabulous. It's Built Bar. And the promo code LOCKED15 will get you a 15% welcome. It's not a welcome bonus, 15% just off. Speaking of welcome bonuses, Lockdown will get a 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag. That's where my brain went before it was actually time. Playoff lines are in if you want to play the playoffs this weekend. The Bengals are a 6.5-point favorite over the Raiders. That game was insane last night. The Bills are a 4.5-point favorite over the Patriots. That's kind of fun. Tampa Bay's a 9.5-point favorite over the Eagles. And Dallas is a 3-point favorite over the hot Niners. Kansas City's a 13-point favorite over the Steelers. And then the Monday night game will be Rams and Cardinals. And the Rams are a 4.5-point favorite there. Tonight, it's really interesting. Be funny. I should have Dave Mason on, who's our guy. It'd be interesting to hear what the line is tonight for the Jazz. They're an 11.5-point favorite. I wonder what it'd be if Rudy was playing. Detroit plus 11.5. Interesting. Brooklyn and Portland tonight. Brooklyn's a 9.5-point favorite. What's going on with Dame? Like, Josh Lloyd, our Lockdown Fantasy Basketball guy, is like basically saying don't touch him. Jazz have slipped behind the Lakers now, or equal to the Lakers in championship odds. Brooklyn's plus 275, Warriors plus 325, Bucks plus 750, Suns plus 900. We're down to 1,200. That's all. I've actually called it like you're a title contender if you're inside 1,000. They have us out of that, my little realm there. And have us just 4 title contenders at this point. In the West, the Warriors are plus 160, the Suns are plus 400, the Jazz are plus 550 to win the West, and the Lakers are plus 600, so we're still above that. And why the Lakers are still there, who knows? I think I saw Ja Morant. Oh my gosh, did you see Ja Morant? Did you see Ja Morant last night? Did you see the rebound? I mean, the block shot and the rebound. If you did not see it, Google search it. It is incredible. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. All right, let's go to some of your questions before we get into who Denzel Valent. I don't understand why Eric doesn't play more. He's better than Royce at every single thing other than a bit worse than the three. That's like saying, like, I'm a bit less good looking than George Clooney. And I don't disagree with everything else, but I'm actually, I mean, like, I'm stronger, sexier, and a bit less good looking than George Clooney. It's actually just not right on that one. I don't think he can defend the same way. I don't think he can move it the same way. He certainly can't shoot it the same way. I'm not sure on that one. Justin Bagley's looking for a Beagley is looking for a baby name. He's going with Bilt. I think this is really the story of the next 2 months of the NBA. This is the dead time of the NBA where like the storylines are kind of lacking. Super Bowl goes on, trade deadline perks us back up, and then we kind of click back in March. But Klay Thompson back, Kawhi Leonard lingering, Jamal Murray back, and the Lakers figuring out LeBron center. Though I will say, like, my take on the Lakers all year was that they weren't going to be about 500 around game 50 or 60 and have to really hit the throttle to get out of the playing game and be five or six and they would be exhausted by the time they hit the playoffs. That was my take the whole time on the Lakers. If you actually recall, it's kind of gotten twisted and turned a little bit. That's why I said LeBron playing 40 minutes a night as the center cannot, like, he is superhuman, but it cannot be great for the long-term health of that franchise. Like, he played 33 minutes last night. It's flabbergasting what he's doing. 35 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists last night. 14 of 19. He's playing center. Now, the other team's playing Jaren Jackson Jr., so that's not going to beat you up. Steven Adams wasn't available. But I do kind of wonder, like, if this is not going to wear out the Lakers a little bit. Jorgis, I think Hassan gets frustrated when he doesn't touch the ball in offense. I think you're right, Jorgis. He has never gotten out of that. He wants his double-doubles. He wants touching the ball. It's how he stays motivated. And I think you're right. And that's very difficult. And a lot of our guys are that way. And this has been the ongoing issue for us, I think, all year long. Is if we're getting the ball, everything plays out. But there's no way everybody can be getting the ball enough because we have too many players who need the ball. David, can you show the defense with or without Gobert this season? What I've been telling everyone is that the Jazz are a bad defensive team without Gobert. And we've been a bad defensive team without Gobert for two, three years now. We made a switch, the right switch. We moved five different positions for offensive-based players from defensive-based players. And we became one of the best offensive teams in the league. It's why we're winning. And then we built the defense around Rudy. And the problem we have is that when Rudy is not available, we're not good defensively. We weren't good last year. If you go back to last year's season, when Rudy Gobert was off the floor, I think we're better this year until just recently. But when Rudy Gobert was off the floor last year in the 2021 season, our defense was in the 22nd percentile at 116. The 1920 season, which is the bubble season, when we had Tony Bradley as our center, our defense was in the 16th percentile. Okay. So we made this switch. And again, I'm 100% like, don't start doing some revisionist history that the switch to be an offensive team was the right one. We had taken the defensive team, it was the wrong one. We had done the defensive team as long as we possibly could. And we couldn't build an offense that was good enough to be able to compete against the best teams in the league. So we did it 1920 season. Our defense was in the 16th percentile when Rudy's off the floor. In the 2021 season, our defense was in the 20th percentile. And now this year, with Rudy off the floor, our defense is now slid to the 15th percentile. I mean, it's 3 years in a row. Marcus Morris was basically right. Like, Rudy covers up for everyone. Our defense is a 115.4, and Rudy, we haven't been as impactful this year with Rudy on the floor. When Rudy's on the floor, our defense is in the 89th percentile. I mean, the contrast is, you know, an MVP campaign for Rudy, frankly. When Rudy's on the floor, we're in the 15th off, we're in the 89th percentile defensively, and when he's off the floor, we're in the 15th. Come on. Like, what else do you need to know? It's a pretty incredible number. The year before, we're in the 22nd percentile. When Rudy was on the floor, we were in the 98th percentile. And then the last part about it, I would say, is that you're in the last one is the 80th percentile and the 16th percentile defensively. So, yeah, I mean, it's incredible. All right, Denzel Valentine, Daniel House. We've seen a little bit of him. I actually think he's going to be able to help. I think he could stick around longer than just the 10-day hardship contract. He's a good shooter. He's a little more athletic defensively. He's shown a little bit of ability to move it. He's not a real driver, but he seems all right. Denzel Valentine to me is really interesting. I thought he was 6'6". Basketball Reference has him listed at 6'4". He's 28 years old. He played at Michigan State for 4 years. I wasn't particularly high on him out of Michigan State as a lottery type pick. I mean, he had a great year. He averaged 19 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists his senior year. He's 22 years old at Michigan State. And he became a first-round pick and the 14th pick by the Bulls. And it was okay. But he shot 36% from three his career. You know what the best way to describe Denzel Valentine is? He's actually like a poor man's, if he's really 6'6", not 6'4". He's a poor man's Joe Ingles in every regard. He can handle, he can rebound a little bit. He can't shoot it quite as well, but he can play all those things. He's actually a pretty good pick and roll player. He's a horrendous isolation player. Like, he can't beat anyone. He's not an athlete in any way, shape, or form. But if you actually go back to look at his numbers a year ago with the Chicago Bulls, he actually is a pretty good pick and roll player. Like, in our system, with multiple pick and roll ball handlers and coming off advantages and getting a pick and roll, he might be able to do some things in that regard. So he was in the 60th percentile in pick and roll play the year before. He actually can set up, can play kind of small a little bit, but he's an average shooter. He's not a good isolation player. Defensively, he's pretty heavy footed. And so that's going to be the issue. I thought he was six. Again, I think he's 6'6". And so he's kind of another ball handling 6'6" kind of tight player that is, you know, maybe is something we can develop in a way. It matches to me that he's a player we could develop. 2 years ago, he shot the spot up really, really well. Last year, he shot it okay. But in all these years, he's been a pretty good pick and roll ball handler in like the 70th percentile play. So I actually think he's a little interesting in that regard and what he might be able to do for us. And if he understands our system and how we play, he works into the kind of players we've actually done well to be able to kind of develop in their next stage in their career. So I think he's actually kind of a poor man's Joe Ingles. He's not quite as athletic. He's not quite as good a ball handler. He's not quite as good a shooter, but he does a lot of the same things. He's probably a little bit more flat footed, not quite as athletic. But it's interesting. So it's pretty interesting to see in that regard. All right. That is Locked On Jazz today. Hope you had a good one. Talk to you soon. Enjoy yourself. We'll be back with you postcast tonight after the game, and I'll be with you tomorrow. Maybe from the van. See ya.